Hi everyone, welcome to the first podcast of 2024 between Rahul and myself. So wishing everybody firstly a happy new year, where we basically talk about, so this is the podcast where we talk about films and film writing. I am Pankaj, and I have with me again Rahul Desai, critic for the Film Companion and writer for many other publications. So as I said, that this is our first podcast for the year, and today we have a few topics. But before I go there, Rahul, how have the last few weeks been?
Last few weeks, I mean, it's been a challenging couple of weeks on at a personal level. My father fell ill, so I had to come back to Ahmedabad, which is my hometown, for indefinitely. So I've been working from here. It's things are stabler now on the personal front. So it's been a bit chaotic, but yeah, I mean, everyone, to whoever's listening, thank you for listening this first podcast of 2024, as Pankaj mentioned. Sorry for a bit of a sort of gap in between. As you may have heard, I just dealing with some stuff. But it's been a good start for the new year, because even though I had a lot to do last week, and there was a lot of pressure, a lot of tensions beyond movies, the good thing is I had like some, it's been a very interesting start to the year, because I managed to watch Killer Soap as well as Shriram Raghavan's new film Merry Christmas in this last week alone. And I was very happy because they both offered such different kinds of satisfactions and joys. Lots to discuss in both films, you know, that is a separate thing altogether, but it was very encouraging, because sometimes when we get caught up in life, we tend to forget about, you know, like these things aren't really our first priorities on our mind. So for me, it was very like gratifying, and it was very therapeutic to be able to watch, say, a Shriram Raghavan film in the first week or second week of New Year. It's been it's been a slow start. There's not really been much to watch on the film front, but so I've been catching up with a lot of Oscar contenders, which is basically around the corner. So I've been catching up with a lot of older films from last year, but otherwise it's been a fairly slow start. I also recommend watching Abhishek Chaubey's show, because it's been getting mixed reviews, but it's such a fascinating, such an interesting mix of genres. It's another Macbeth adaptation in a very different sort of sense. Nothing you'd expect. And it's sort of based on a true story as well. So it's been very interesting to see the discourse around both these titles.
Right. I know I got to know about your father. I hope he recovers fully soon. So yeah, and you know, continuing the topic that you mentioned, so I thought, you know, it might be nice to cover a little bit about the black comedies. So firstly, let me ask this question, which sometimes I think about. Do you think is black comedy a sort of an elitist genre, that not everybody is going to get it, so the audience is already limited?
I mean, it's sort of a niche, like, in a way, obviously, because, you know, of course, we've known over the years there are different kind of comedies, and black comedies in Hindi cinema tend to be a bit of a mix of everything. There's always a bit of slapstick, there's always a bit of, I mean, dark humor isn't something that we naturally are attuned to grasp as a culture, right? Like, I don't think we, Indians in general have a sense of humor. So it's very difficult for filmmakers to sort of be dark about, like, it's very behavioral humor in that sense. So I'd say it's a niche genre. It's difficult to pull off, because not everyone gets it, as you mentioned. And it requires a very different skill set in terms of writing and performance and craft. And I think very few filmmakers can pull it off. I thought Guns and Gulabs was very interesting in terms of how it was a sort of melange of different sort of comedies, different sort of humor, different sort of drama last year. But the stakes were very low in that sense. It was only a black comedy and sort of nothing else. And that's why Killer Soup, which just released, is such an interesting example of that. And that's why, you know, I feel like very few filmmakers are even motivated to make something like that, because it's, there's always an insecurity about it, whether people will get it or not. So they always combine it with other different genres.
So are, you know, Raj and DK sort of the, they've only made sort of these dark, edgy comedies. They are sort of the pioneers, you will say.
So I would say, I wouldn't call them the pioneers, but right now they are the upholders of it. Like, they are the most popular examples of dark, of black comedies, you know, and everything they made, like long form, especially in the last few years, whether Family Man or Guns and Gulabs or Farzi, they've been great examples of black comedies in different sense. And the fact that they've been able to pull it off while at the same time delivering commentary, while at the same time giving us terrific cast and performances, I felt like they found a sweet spot in at least long-form narratives that very few filmmakers can boast of. Because as a feature-length film, I think black comedies are easier to pull off than, like, say, the tonal inconsistencies of a show. And I think Raj and DK are great examples of how you can pull it off without really only, like sort of servicing that genre. I thought that's why Guns and Gulabs was a bit of a hit and miss, because they committed so hard to the tone, they committed so hard to the madness of a black comedy, that I felt like there was not much else to take away from the show apart from its eccentricities, apart from its quirkiness and its performances. And I think even Ye Kali Kali Aake, which was made a couple of years ago, which came out on Netflix, even though it was fairly like underrated in that sense, and it came out in the beginning of the year, so not many people were talking about it by the end of the year, I thought that's a great example of a black comedy also, because it had so many, again, pop cultural references, it had so many takes on Hindi cinema and subversions of Hindi cinema. At the same time, we tend to use the adjective twisted a lot when it comes to black comedies, and I think I found myself trying to come up with different adjectives for that show, at least when I watched it, because, you know, there were so many little observations, little tidbits on how sort of Bollywood tends to, or how cinema in general tends to influence Indian people, say from middle India, from the hinterland, that I love those kind of shows and films that mine that relationship between pop culture and between how people tend to behave when they're put under pressure. And I thought Ye Kali Kali Aake was a very fine example.
Among Raj and DK's work, you know, they did 99, and then there was Go Goa Gone was also them, I think. And then, you know, more recent ones like The Family Man and the others, the Guns and Gloves. So how was 99 and Go Goa Gone? Do you remember about watching them?
So 99, obviously, you know, I think their first film or one of their first. I watched it very long ago, and I watched it only once. And I remember not really getting it back then, because, you know, you tend to call these things parallel cinema back then. Anything that's not mainstream is sort of alternate or parallel. But, you know, over the years, I've been meaning to watch it again. And a lot of things about that film have stuck with me, because they are, I mean, if you think about what 99 was about and the way they pulled that off back then, it really is the germs of what the Raj and DK we see today in every show they make. And I think that was again a very sort of, it was a brave swing for the fences in that sense. And a lot of people who have watched Raj and DK films and shows over the years still consider 99 to be some of their best work. And if I revisit it, I'd love to revisit it. I'd get a different sort of context of it. And Go Go Gone was more of a stoner comedy. So I'd say like it was more on your face. It was slapstick. It was zombie comedies. It was a bunch of things. It was less of a black comedy than the stuff they're making now. I think the essence of a black comedy is that there are elements of reality that appear to be funny when looked at through a different lens. And that is, I think there's not too much fantasy in that sense. There's a lot of realization that the life we live and are lived in reality itself, there's a lot of humor to be mined in it if looked at from a third person perspective. So I feel like Gogogon was more of a very standard Hollywoodized zombie comedy. It was very enjoyable, of course, because Hindi cinema isn't really known to get into particular genres because it's really risky. I'd say Delhi Belly also, even though it's not Raj and DK, it's a good example of a black comedy. And again, you know, that when it released, we realized how much of it was so brave and risky for its time because it didn't have an interval. It was in almost in English language entirely. It was Aamir Khan backing it. So, you know, you're right about the fact that black comedy needs a leap of faith, at least in terms of creators and directors and filmmakers wanting to do it. But I am worried these days that when I watch a black comedy, a lot of it seems to be accessorized or made more mainstream for the sake of audiences. You know, you can't really only call it a black comedy. A lot of what Kashyap used to make used to be also black comedies, if you look at it. Like, a lot of parts of Gangs of Vasepur was a black comedy. Parts of a lot of his other films can be qualified as that as well. So you know, it's a genre that can be made too flexible at times, and you tend to do that because you're worried about how people will process dark humor and morbid humor. So you tend to see that in shows these days.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Andhadhun always comes to our mind when we talk about this dark comedy. So yeah. Is it again one of the best black comedies in the last 20 years?
I think Sriram Raghavan is sort of a master of that because he makes you think you're watching a thriller throughout, but it's actually like you can also write it's a black comedy, a noir, a crime caper, a lot of things combined. Like even Merry Christmas is like you'd say Merry Christmas is almost like a culmination of all his films in a sense because it's more serious than the others, but also more poignant than the others. But I think Andhadhun was a great cocktail of how we tend to understand a black comedy. That first half of Andhadhun is some of the best, first of all, filmmaking in Hindi cinema in the last decade. And I think it's his understanding of exactly what I was saying earlier about how real life tends to be very, very perversely funny if you look at it from an outside perspective. And I think a lot of the situational humor in that film was actually so dark and so serious that we didn't know for most of the film whether we should be laughing at the audacity of what he's making or the characters and the way the lies and the deceit, or whether we should be like on the edge about the thriller, about the suspense that he's creating. So I think Sriram Raghavan really understands the he's a purist in terms of it, and I think he understands it better than most because you saw it in even in his early films like Johnny Gadar and even in sort of Ek Haseena Thi, there were parts that felt like a black comedy. So I think, he's come to really weaponize the genre in the last 20 years, which I think we need more of.
And any Hollywood black comedies that are your favorite that come to your mind?
Hollywood black comedies, tough to really... I don't know. Nothing comes to my mind like immediately. Do you have any example? Like,
so I looked at it. The common ones were In Bruges. I hope I'm saying it correctly. In Bruges, yeah. Comes in, and then they are so adept at making. So for like, you know, Hollywood, it doesn't stand out as like it's more common there. I felt like so, but. There was In Bruges, and they were quite more the last samurai something.
I'd say like In Bruges is a great example, and even the last film Banshees of Inisherin, like a lot of them. That's the thing. Like I think with filmmakers like that, you tend to look at their films in a particular way, but a lot of the sort of individual scenes can be qualified as dark comedy, but if you look at it, if you zoom out and look at it as a whole, they don't feel like it. And I think that's the genius of filmmakers like that. And even Coen brothers, you know, for the longest time they've been making films like that. I remember watching Burn After Reading like more than a decade ago and coming out absolutely blown away by how a film can be so funny and so relevant and so affecting at the same time. So and you're right that, you know, it's a more common genre in the West. even their rom-coms tend to be black comedies at times. And that's why, you know, it's a very different culture here. To look at a black comedy here, you can't really call it a black comedy, a dark comedy. So yeah, I mean, there have been examples over the years. I think a lot of filmmakers here take inspiration from that, from the West, from the 70s and 80s and the comedies made over the years. So yeah, of course, if we go through a lot of Hollywood releases, I think we'll find many more.
And then, you know, strangely, both of Abhishek Chaubey and Riya Agarwal, they have films releasing this week.
Yeah.
So, like, how about Ishkia and Dead Ishkia? Which one do you like more as a film?
I'd say Ishkia has the novelty factor. I think a lot of us were absolutely charmed by, first of all, the chemistry between Nasiruddin Shah and Arshad Wasi. And of course, Vidya Balan, you know, in one of her most intoxicating roles. Like, this was a very different Vidya Balan we saw back then. And she's so versatile and she could do anything anytime. So for me, Ishkia really stood out because, first of all, we didn't see it coming. Secondly, Abhishek Chaubey, protege of Vishal Bhadwaj, one of the best filmmakers of our times. So I think I really watched parts of Ishkia again and again just for the sort of screwball comedy at the same time, like that very roguish masculinity that is shared between the two leads. I think Arshad Wasi is such an underrated actor, even though he's been like in some of the most important Hindi films in the last two decades. And Nasiruddin Shah, in one of the most different roles he's done before, sort of he's grown into the senior statesman and stalwart. I think Abhishek Chaubey caught him at the right time. So for me, Ishkia was definitely like the more enjoyable watch or the more potent watch. And Dead Ishkia is, I'd say, objectively a better film, because you could see Abhishek Chaubey also sort of evolving as a filmmaker. And that entire track of Madhuri Dixit, Huma Qureshi, and the way the femininity was sort of like looked at through the lens of, you know, our two like protagonists, our two male protagonists, I think a lot of it showed evolution as a storyteller, as a filmmaker. But for me, again, you know, it's really hard to get past the first one, especially in terms of the soundtrack, especially in terms of the tone it set and the way it treated the black comedy.
Right. Would you call Ludo a dark comedy or a black comedy?
I'd say it's more of a... Yeah, it is a black comedy in a very broad sense, but it has a lot of other elements of comedy in it also. It has a lot of screwball humor, it has slapstick, it has... it has, you know, so much more than just a black comedy. And it's so blatantly a black comedy, you know. Sometimes I feel like the beauty of a black comedy is you can't tell that it is what it is till you reach the end of the film or till you sort of zoom out and look at it from an overall perspective. And I think that's what Raghavan and Abhishek Chaubey are so good at. And even Vishal Bhadwaj in parts has been making films like that over the years. So I think Ludo is... It's like, it's in a very broad sense, it's that, but it's not that pure in terms of that genre.
And then there was Kashyap's AK versus AK. How was that film?
Yeah, I think Motwane basically caught on to something there, because I don't think I'd call it a black comedy. I called it like a sort of meta comedy. I call it a lot of other things. I wouldn't even call it a comedy per sense, because I think a lot of it was, you could imagine like Sriram Raghavan making a film like that if he was more ensconced within the system, within the Varsova filmmaking cinephilia system. Like, but Sriram Raghavan comes from a very different background. So I think his is a very sort of almost retro style storytelling or humor. So a lot of it can be traced back to the filmmaker's influences. And I think Motwane, because he has operated in a particular ecosystem under Kashyap earlier and now on his own in a particular part of Bombay, his perception of comedy is very different. And I'd say another example of that is I think something came to my mind right now. I forgot it. But yeah, let's talk more about it. I think it'll come back to me.
Right. And then there is Bhardwaj, Vishal Bhardwaj's Kameene, and he's also made Saath Khun Maaf. So how was Kameene for you as a film? It again was very mixed response. Mm. Critics loved it. And again, you know, some people like, what is this? How was Kameene for you?
I, Kamini was one of my favorite Vishal Bhadwaj films, like for the longest time. I don't know if it still is. I'll have to revisit a lot of his filmography. But when I watched it, I remember like immediately loving it more than his Shakespearean adaptations. Of course, those will stand the test of time more. But Kamini was such just kinetic, such brutal, such raw filmmaking. It had Shahid Kapoor at his best also, the double roles. And there was a rhythm to that film that I didn't see in a lot of his other films. It was him like really managing every, like micromanaging every department, every element of filmmaking. He was pretty much doing everything at that point. And Vishal Bhadwaj was at his peak then. So I felt like, Kamine got a mixed reception, but I'd say it's definitely one of his better films. I still wouldn't know if I would call it a black comedy, but I'd say there were a lot of descendants of that. There were a lot of descendants on, you know, this one night in a city sort of comedies that we tend to see in the last 5 years or so. Like, I think the writer of Delhi Belly, Akshat Verma, made Kala Kandi a couple of years ago. Saif Ali Khan is a face of black comedy also. You know, he tends to like really veer towards that sense. There have been a couple of others that have gone under the radar. But I think a lot of the influences come from Vishal Bhadwaj, come from early Sriram Raghavan, come from, a lot of filmmakers are operating in the 2000s at a very high level.
Right. And, you know, Saif also did, of course, Being Saras. That was, again, one of the earliest. Again, I don't know if it's black comedy, but I found notes people call it black comedy. So that's also there. So Homi and Jani also made Fanny.
Finding Fanny. That's a good example, because that's still one of my favorite. Like, for me, it's my favorite film by him. I don't think he's made a decent film for a while. I wasn't a big fan of Cocktail, even though Being Cyrus was pretty haunting. In a different sense, I call that more of a thriller like than a black comedy. But like, I think he really got it spot on. Again, you know, Homi Ajani, a very divisive filmmaker. I think Finding Fanny was his best film, because it's been very difficult to really follow that up. I really enjoyed like that entire based in Goa sort of eccentricity, sort of madness. And for me, that film still stands out, like in terms of anything. Like, you call it the soundtrack, the performances, the cast. Even Arjun Kapoor and Deepika Padukone had like chemistry in that film, and you can't say that often. So I don't think he's been able to reproduce that. But you do tend to associate his name with, say, dark comedies.
How was Saas Bahu and Flamingo?
For me, it didn't work. It was a big mess. Like, it was, again, you know, when you're making a show, it's very difficult to be consistent in tone, very difficult to pull off what you've been doing in feature films. It was his long-form debut, and I think there were elements of what it could have been. It was a great cast, Dimple Kapadia, a bunch of young actors are very promising. But, Radhika Madan, I generally really like her and all. But this was a bit all over the place. The basics were not there. The filmmaking was a bit raw. It felt like it was made in a hurry. It might have looked better on paper. But I think Homi Ajania just went overboard with something like it. A lot of filmmakers tend to think that, I feel like if you're making a web show or if you're making a television, like you're making 8 or 10 episodes of something, they tend to go overboard. They tend to amplify the tone rather than sort of stretch the story or write the story in long form format. And I think that's what happened with this. It was mostly, a lot of it was incoherent, even though, there were parts of it that seemed to stand out, but it's really par for the course for Homi Ajania.
Right. For trivia, a lot of people already know it, but he's married to Anaita Shroff. Jania, who is of course the one of the very famous editors of Vogue, currently the director, and she was the one who starred in DDLJ as well. And then now, what's your favorite scene from Andhadhun?
Oh man, I think it's the piano scene. Nothing will ever top that. Like, when the body is being sort of handled in the house and it's a piano. I mean, there are moments that I love, like when Tabu comes, Tabu comes to his house later on and tries to test him to see if he's blind still. I think the fantastic sort of performance between that tension that Raghavan creates in the in his apartment in Pune is great, but I feel like nothing can top what I was going through or what a lot of audiences were going through when he was playing that birthday sort of for you know the man's birthday. He was playing on the piano trying to pretend to be blind while she was sort of dragging a body out with her lover, it of the body of her husband. I think it's just great mise-en-scene. The staging was outstanding, and that scene still stays with me. I wish I could feel what I felt the first time when I watched it. It's that good.
Right. And you reminded me of that scene when she wears that scream mask. The and I still remember your tweet where you you spoke about that little boy getting slapped, and it made me laugh. I still remember that, you know, you said that it was satisfying, because it was funny that kid was annoying. But yeah, I remember that piece you'd written about the artists, the incomplete artist, like he was trying to find something as an artist, he becomes blind. You know, it's such a unique concept, and this sensibility can't be learned. It's somehow it's there in him, you know. It's just very hard to, I feel, you know, the same conversation of can writing be learned? He has that sensibility. He watches all these French films and everything. Maybe he's developed a taste. But again, he's a genius.
You're absolutely right about that. You know, these things, so much of it matters in the way you've grown up, what you've grown up on, what you have a passion for, how you've gone through film school, how you've what your influences are, the directors you worked under. You know, his time with Ram Gopal Varma must have contributed a lot to the way he makes thrillers right now, or the way he thinks of, odes to Bollywood or odes to the films he's grown up on. And you see that in the people who come after him also, right? Vasan Bala's Monica, Oh My Darling, was a great example again of black comedy. And it's so much, so Raghavan-esque, you know, so many elements of Johnny Gadar in that, so many elements of so many Raghavan films in that. And just the way you made, he's made a cocktail of so many things in that film, it's very difficult to learn, as you said. And even Vasan Bala, you know, you can tell that they've grown up on a particular pulpy genre of Hindi cinema, and the way the affection they have for the kind of cinema, for the kind of literature they've sort of grown up on, is very difficult to just put in your film. So it's just that kind of thing. If you're honest to who you are as a person, you can make the best possible film.
And then, you know, there is this sort of last question on this topic, which is, it was also Abhay Deol's Ek Chalis Ki Last Local, which has sort of become a cult classic. Would you call that black comedy?
I'd call that a black comedy. In fact, Abhay Deol is also what he was doing in that phase of his career. A lot of it could qualify as that, you know, and I remember how popular that track became before Pritam came back into the news later on for Brahmastra. I think that they were comparing the songs from both the films, I think, or a particular hook of those songs. I remember how popular the soundtrack was, Ek Chalis Ki Last Local, and I remember this was before I got into film criticism. So I was hanging out with a lot of aspiring filmmakers, aspiring writers, and I remember how much they swore by this film, and we used to watch this almost every other month in someone's house, on someone's laptop. This film it became a cult film over a period of time, but even back then, the amount of adulation it got within the industry, within the circles, within aspiring directors, and the amount of inspiration it gave people was massive. I think I was part of that circle also.
One person opens the door for other people, you know, take that step. And now with OTT, we're seeing this proliferation with Raj and DK. So, times change. Okay, I think I'll now move to our second topic, which was covering two sort of very interesting actors, both of them who had very great last year, Bhumi Pednekar and Vikrant Masi. And is Dam Lagake Haisha one of the best rom-coms in the last 15 years? Would you call it a good rom-com?
I say it was definitely one of, it's right up there. And, you know, it's, I'd say it's one of the most original rom-com, because rom-coms are derivative by nature, right? By style. And, you know, everything you see is a reference to what came before. It's sort of a recycling of what we've seen before. It's either a subversion of it or not a subversion of it. So it's very difficult to, that's why love stories are dying. That's why rom-coms are not as common anymore, and that they're difficult to make. Most of them just limited to Christmas releases. So I'd say Dam Laga Ke Aisha is one of the breaths of fresh air because of how it recycled our reading of 90s pop culture. It's what TVF was doing for a while until they made it too much of a formula. And I think it was such a charming film for the way it used texture, for the way it used the small town comedy as sort of almost a lightning rod to, you know, deliver commentary, a social message drama. Even Ayushman was slightly early in his career. Bhoomi Pednekar, nobody had seen before. The cast became more of a formula after that, right? Like, you saw a lot of those actors come in so many small town comedies after that. And a lot of them starred Ayushman. A lot of them starred either Bhoomi or you know, Rajkumar Rao. So it was definitely a trendsetter in a way, because I think 2015, not a lot of people expected a film like this to, number one, release, and number two, do well and garner the kind of affection and discourse that it did. Because Shubh Mangal Saudhan, a lot of those other films came after that.
Yeah. One thing, again, you know, sometimes these random tweets which from people you remember. So there's this, I still remember reading on Dam Laga Ke Aisha about the sweater that Ayushman used to wear. You know, sometimes when you wear that sweater, that that cut is there. You know, that there is a, like, where the V cut width is. So somebody said that, you know, the level of detailing was so good that somebody, again, who has a lived-in experience, can only see that cut of that brown sweater from the middle. So, you know, these small things you remember. But how do you rate Bhoomi as an actress?
That's actually a question I've been thinking a lot about, you know, even since you discussed that we're going to discuss this today. And secondly, even over the years, since I've been, like, reviewing films and all, I've always been thinking about how at the end of the year, when we make our lists, we sort of tend to take particular actors and actresses for granted as to either how good they are or how middling they are or how sort of omnipresent they are. And I think Bhoomi is one of them in terms of her omnipresence. You know, I can't really say that she's ever given a bad performance, because I think she is, she's one of those born actors who has a presence on screen, who has a very definite sense of the kind of women she wants to play on screen and the kind of film she wants to do and take sort of Hindi cinema forward in terms of that. We've seen with the kind of role she's done. And she's more than happy to share space with other very formidable actors. And I think she's a very interesting actress. I think I've liked her in a lot of films. But at the same time, I've never kept her at, like, for example, when I was thinking about last year, and Badai Do was one of the better films last year, I was always thinking of how good Rajkumar Rao was in that. But it was also taken for granted that Bhoomi was, if not as good, almost right up there in terms of the role she played. And she contributed just as much to that film as he did. And even though we tend to take his performance as the better one, it's very difficult to compare. So I think Bhoomi is that kind of actress that I think has a lot of like, I would never dismiss her. If I see a film, a trailer with her in it, I would know that the film can be something new. Whether I like it or not, it's something novel. It's more of a swing for the fences. I haven't seen Thank You for Coming Still. I was traveling when it released last year. But I've heard a lot about it. Very divisive. A lot of people hated it. A lot of people liked it. But even her presence in films like Bheed and Afwa, even though those films were technically about a man, about a hero, I think what she brings to the female characters in those films, we can't reduce to the tag of a heroine. You know, it's always a very formidable presence in her own right. They always seem to be occupying narratives of their own, the women she plays. And I think, like, it's hard to sometimes really pinpoint actors like her over the years, but I really liked her in the Love Story segment of Zoya in 2018. Like, when she did play a domestic help, and it's a film full of silences and glances and, you know, a remarkable short film. And I think that's when I started taking her very seriously as an actress, because she did something that was very difficult. And since then, you know, I've never really been disappointed with her. I always feel like she can do better with choosing the kind of film she does.
You sort of answered my next question, which was, you know, about her role in Love Story. So I'll ask another related question to that. Tell us, what is your interpretation of the ending? Where, what does the sweet mean? You know, she shares that sweet with the person. How do you read that? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember the ending very well. And they go down in the elevator.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just felt like, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, there can be many interpretations, but I personally just felt like it was, I don't know, it was just her sort of maybe reclaiming her place in what she thought was a joint story. And basically just like sort of not, basically coming to terms with her reality as someone who is working for him and not... or may not have a future with someone like that. Because we do tend to see a lot of love stories sort of, you know, between classes and castes romanticized. And I think that was a very interesting last scene to choose, because she is going down with one of her own. And I think that was also the laddus that the man's mother had offered her in the kitchen, or told her to take home, if I'm not mistaken, earlier in the film, when he gets a... visit for Rishta or something. And that was basically that mandatory thing you give to your domestic help, saying even you join in our celebration, but at the same time it's very tokenistic, saying, you know, you're also part of the family but you're not. So I think that was her reclaiming her place as somewhere in that sort of almost a food chain, if you can call it that.
Okay. Is Soncharia one of her best performance, would you call it?
Certainly it was. Yeah, certainly, because she was definitely responsible for one of two or three of the best moments of the film and of that year in general. Like, nobody can forget the scene with the baby and the scene where she finds out about just the look of realization on her face. You know, it's just so much of it. And that's what, you know, she's done films like that. She's done films like Soncharia, with are so difficult to slot. And of course, she's also done films like Govinda Naam Mera, and, you know, films like I don't know,
Bhoot.
But I really also liked her performance in Dolly Kitty or Wo Chamakte Sitare, which is with Konkana, and both of them playing very different characters. But I think she was very striking in that film. I really enjoyed her performance in that, as well as Badai Do. And even I thought she was very interesting in Afwa last year as well. Even though it was very much a Nawaz film, I thought she played a very crucial role in that. And she has this very, I don't know, she has a certain aura on screen where she can actually be very versatile. She can play, even though we saw her come up play like sort of almost rural characters or, sort of middle Indian characters, I'd say she is equally, she's one of the very few actresses who can also play urban characters at the same time and come off as very convincing. And I didn't like Sand Ki Aankh so much when it released, very messy film. I don't think it was directed well, but I thought she was one of the high points of that film, at least in terms of the energy she brought to that film.
Who was the best male performance in Soncharia for you?
Manoj Bajpayee. It was just a haunting performance. It was like, it still sticks with me. Just that scene of him, it's just such melancholy on his face. And we knew all along what he was trying to do. We find out later. And that, you know, it was all about salvation. And just that scene where he's sitting with Sushant on the banks of the river and talking about the child, it's very haunting. It was one of his better performances, even though it was a supporting turn, almost a cameo in a sense. I think it was right up there. Manoj Bajpayee's very, very impressive filmography.
Right. And I I sort of knew it before, but I wasn't sure. Like, so she has a twin sister or a real sister who looks just like her. So it was a little like, okay, I was seeing some pictures of her, like while I was researching, like, okay, they look so striking together. Anyway, so, you know, she's also done this films with Akshay Kumar with the Samaj Seva, call it, Toilet, and then others. So, you know, is there any Akshay Kumar film that is actually decent, which he's done related to when he's done like these sort of social messaging, like Toilet, Padman? Do you like any of them? And not like, but like any of them were better, decent films?
None of them have been substantial. Like, I've disliked all of them, like, equally, because of how blatant it is and how very openly sort of lot of virtue signaling and male savior, and it's just a platform for him, and it's dishonest. A lot of those films are dishonestly made, like, and that's my problem when Akshay Kumar does social messaging. We know he has political propaganda, we know a lot of things why he's doing these films, and it's a waste of talent, because I think he's still one of the best comedians we've had in the last 2 or 3 decades. And when he started doing comedies, I was a very happy person, because his comic timing was second to none, especially as someone who came up as an action star. You know, there were people like Ajay Devgan who was trying to do comedies as well, those multi-starers, and even things like Hera Feri, only Akshay Kumar could have pulled off. And he is the one who discovered that comic bone, even though he's been 3 different kinds of genres he's done over the years. I think this is just a waste of his talent. I think none of his films have worked on that level, not even Mission Mangal, none of them. No matter how good the cast is around him, it's just the dishonesty that seeps through those social message dramas. The commentary is not organic. A lot of it is badly written. A lot of it is like, it just openly like has an agenda. So it's just, it's not good. You may as well just watch PSAs on screen.
And you know, Bhumi did a very weird role in Bala, where her color face was colored. And do you think that it's a problem? And I see that, I haven't seen yet 12th Fail, but from the pictures, it looks like, you know, coloring, like he's been made a little bit more brown. I might be wrong.
So the good thing, interesting thing you mentioned, like in films like Bala, what we call the brown face syndrome. In films like Bala and all, they've definitely done that. And you can tell when you are used to seeing certain mainstream faces, when their skin tone changes, it can be a little jarring. And we've seen that with actors over the years. I don't have any strong opinions on that. I don't mind them if the film works. I minded it when Hrithik Roshan did it in what's the film's name? In the Vikas Pal film, which Super 30. Yeah. I ended it in that, because it was pretty jarring. It was distracting. Hrithik Roshan, the acting was too distracting as well. Like, it was a bit over the top. But the good thing, and 12th Fail, good thing about that is, like, I feel, and I found out like later, and now if you like see the making of videos and all, you know that Vikrant Mase was told to get darker. So he actually spent 1 month in scorching heat, like 45 degrees in a village or something. He actually had skin conditions after that, but rather than brown facing him, that was natural tan. And you know, of course, when you see him in the trailer, you're like, of course Vikrant Mase is not this dark, and again they brown faced another actor. But it helps sometimes to find out later that, you know, it was actually, I mean, it was technically, he did put in the effort to look naturally tanned. And it went very well in the character, because within the first few scenes of that film, you lose you lose any sense of what his skin color is. He immediately belongs to the environment. He immediately belongs to where he comes from, because he lives in Chambal, and then he comes to Delhi after that. So that, I feel like that extra bit of effort, that 10%, 20% more that actors insist on putting in, matter. And if that context we learn later, I think it adds to our experience of watching the film.
Got it. Now, coming to Masi, Vikrant Masi, he's got so much praise for 12th Fail, but we know he's been a great actor. Would you call 12th Fail his better performance, or a Death in the Gange?
I think Death in the Gunge was by far like his best performance. He's been around for a while. That's, you know, it's good you mentioned that, because we've always like, I even though he's appeared in some terrible films over the years, I have never looked away from the screen when he's been on it. You know, he has that very, very definite, absolute energy that he can be, you know, he can be a very jittery, toxic man on screen. He can also be like the hero's friend. He can also be a villain. He can also be a hero. And it's just that he has such a specific presence on screen that, and which is not nothing to do with mainstream heroism, that, you know, people haven't really noticed him. And it's sad that he's noticed only for 12 films, because he's been doing good acting for a long time. Like Love Hostel last year was terrific. But then he also did some terrible films like Forensic and Gaslight, which I had the misfortune of reviewing. But he, whenever he's come on screen, I've always enjoyed it. Like, I've always liked that he's been there. He's tried to give it the lead hero, the romantic hero, a bit of a push with films like, you know, 14 Fere, 14 Fere, which was a couple of years ago, came out during the pandemic. That was, again, a mess. I really liked him in Haseen Dilruba. I still watch parts of it again. I still, that film has grown on me over time. Once I've started looking at it through a different lens. And I still watch parts of what he does in that film, because I felt like he does that past Ranbir Kapoor roles better than sort of Ranbir Kapoor did in a lot of those films. And it was less commercial than those films. It was far more pulpy than those films. So I really enjoyed him in Haseen Dilruba. And even the toxic men that he plays in Dolly Kitty or Wo Chamakte Sitare and Lipstick Under My Burka, very similar roles. So the way Alankrita looks at him is very, it's almost one note, but he does wonders with those roles. So, and of course, Kago, Aarti Kadam has been spoken about a lot, and he's such an interesting presence in that. So the kind of films that he has on his roster already so far, even though he's noticed with Lutera and all those films, he did Death in the Gunge only in his third or fourth year in the industry, in the Hindi film industry. And I think that's still his best performance. And Konkana's, I mean, it was one of the better films in the last decade. But having said that, I cannot praise his performance in 12 Fail enough. It's just the way he smiles, the way he looks, the way he sort of internalizes that struggle of a real life character and lives that struggle. It's very old school. And even though it sounds like a very familiar film, I don't think any other actor could have done that.
Tell us more about Cargo.
Cargo, it's one of those rare sort of existential, sci-fi, poignant sort of low-budget, you know, dramas that we aren't going to see enough of. Only as far, like, I don't even think something like Netflix might commission something like that anymore. Cargo came out during the pandemic, I remember, and Aarti Kadam has been making sci-fi short films for a long time, and I've had the fortune of reviewing all of them, and she's such an interesting voice. And again, you know, she's so honest to who she is as a cinephile, as someone who has a particular interest in a genre, that I always expected Cargo to have such deep such a deep reading of human nature, and at the same time being so inventive without really letting us detect the low budgetness, detect the DIY-ness of that film. Because you know, you can go wrong if you're trying to make a sci-fi film in, you know, India in general. And we tend to only look at it on a large scale. That she went internal year, that she made an inner film was one of the best scenes of that year was between the protagonist who's played by Vikrant Mase up in a spaceship, an alien, sort of a divine character, almost like, and having a conversation with the woman he loves, who's played by Konkana in a cameo. That video call was really one of the most poignant moments of the year. And that film really moved me a lot. And even though there's a lot to unpack in that film in terms of how it combined mythology and science, and how it combined sort of, you know, existence. I think at the core of that film was a very, very moving, story about loneliness and about, like, about the greater sort of purpose of humankind. And I think Aarti Kadam, like, I'm very glad we watched that film, because now, you know, of course, she's a very known name, and she's made the remake of Great Indian Kitchen, the Hindi version of it, and I hear it's already been selected in festivals and all. So I'll be watching all of them over the years. But Cargo, And only Vikrant Mase at that particular point could have even agreed to that role. You know, you can see the ambition in the way he chooses his roles. And for every, you know, nonsensical film like Ginny Ved Sunny that he does, there's always a cargo. There's always something to look back on. For every forensic, there's a lover still. And I'm just glad that he's being recognized now for a film that has done so well. I just hope that he doesn't get lost in that, in the way Rajkumar Rao got lost in the last couple of years. You know, he's a fantastic actor, Rajkumar Rao, and he can, you know, he's still right up at the top. But once you tend to get a little mainstream, you tend to lose your soul a little. And I hope Vikrant Mase does not look at this as an opportunity to become a lead hero or romantic hero as such, and continues taking the sort of risk that he has.
I would recommend some people, like I was watching parts of his round table with Bhardwaj Rangan recently, where there was Bhumi, Abhishek Bachchan, Konkana and Vikrant. And again, Vikrant was very nice, the kind of answers he gave. Very thoughtful, very philosophical. So it might be worth checking it out. I've still yet to complete it because I think it was 2 hours, but seen some parts of his bit. So
I saw only the bit of him speaking in Anupama Chopra's roundtable, and you know, you could tell that he's been around for a long time. This has all accumulated, and he's been angsty. He's been you can't blame him for being bitter about not getting his views, an actor as talented as him. And of course, with streaming, we see a lot more. And the irony is that, you know, 12th Fail, which actually released in theaters and did well, there is what got him notice and not streaming. You could see in the way he spoke there that he was trying to really tone down that angst that he has collected over the years. Between him and Tilotama Shom on that round table, you could see how much of it was building up in them, and how wrong they feel, like anyone would in their position, given how talented they are, not getting their dues for so long. But you could also see the dignity with which he was saying things, and the dignity and the grace and the elegance with which he was wording how much of a struggle it's been for someone like him, who's been consistently around, but, you know, only gets noticed now. And I really liked the fact that he was getting emotional in a very graceful way, and he was not really lashing out. He was not being bitter. He was not, and that is in vogue right now, that certain kind of masculinity, thanks to Vanga and thanks to people like Kashyap over the years. Their bitterness is so over the top that when someone like Mase does that, you look at him as an extension of his character in 12th Fail. Because, you know, even that character has gone through so much, and when he finally comes out, that bitterness comes out in the best way possible. He mines it, he channels it into something good, and I think Mase has done that as well. And I'm very glad. You feel happy for actors even though you don't know them. You don't know them personally. You feel happy for actors like him that they're finally getting their due.
Right, absolutely. I, in fact, have even seen him. He used to come in this show called Balika Vadhu I was a kid, and I think maybe 2005, 6 or 7, 8, and like at that point, Karan, and he used to play, he had a great presence there. He was, I think, one of the characters, the lead characters, and he dies, I don't know, maybe quite a while. But again, that, you know, sort of, I thought, you know, he played a slightly rural character, like based in Rajasthan, but when he came in Dil Dhadakne Do, it was initially hard to adjust to that image of him. I remember he used to play Jagya, and now he is in Dil. But after that, he's just so good in all the things, and with
because those who watched a lot of these TV actors make the transition to films, very few of them successfully. But like, I didn't have the baggage of watching Ram Kapoor in, you know, those soaps. So when I finally watched him in films like Udaan and other films later on, I didn't have that baggage. So I could like really appreciate him as for the actor he is, and not be thrown off by the jarring change in medium and in tone and in aesthetic, right? And same for Vikrant Mase. As you mentioned, my mother had seen him in Balika Vadhu for years. And when she saw him on film, finally, she was like, oh God, this guy. how can he be in this film? It just doesn't make sense. And, you know, over the years, so I didn't have that even with Barun Sobti, for example. Like when I see him in shows like Kora and films like Tu Hai Mera Sunday or Halal, I've never seen any of his soaps. And to see him now and to see that they're already so popular amongst the TV watching audiences and they see him so familiarly, but they come with baggage when they act in films. And a lot of people find it very difficult to accept them as versatile actors in film, no matter how talented they are. So it's very interesting, I find, those two different kind of lens to see these actors through and how difficult it is to make that transition from one medium to the other.
Right. You know, he did this Chapak, and I think his character in Chapak, I felt like that's, now if I look back, it's more closer to him in real life. And I remember the scene where Deepika tells him they're in a birthday party or some win, and he tells her, why are you celebrating? And then she tells him that, you know, it's like you behave like acid has been thrown on you while it's actually me, you know, so let me celebrate. But it reminds me of that whole, like he's like the Rajkumar Rao's character in Newton, very like the whole burden of honesty. But he doesn't have that. I might not be making sense, but that in this interview recently I saw that, you know, you put it better, he has that grace, he doesn't have that angst, but he still has a little bit of, you know, like not complaining about life, but he's enjoying that success he's got, but at the same point not letting it hamper him. So we hope he continues to do
it. I mean, to put it like, to phrase it, that imandari ka ghamand, right? Like that you even tweeted about recently, and that standout scene from Newton. Yeah. And a lot of very talented artists tend to have that. And I feel like he's made peace with that now.
Yeah.
And there's integrity about it.
Yeah. Okay. And okay, I think I have one more question for today. We'll cover some topics next week. There is this Love Hostel, and Love Hostel was made by Shankar Raman, right? And Raman, Shankar Raman, and he also made Gurgaon. And somehow I've never seen, he's made these violent films, but which one is your more favorite, Gurgaon or Love Hostel?
I think both very different films, but you know, such. I love both of those films. Like, Gurgaon was such a mood, right? Like, it just felt like such a, almost like an, like a, almost a Gurgaon, I mean, a sort of Indian Godfather of sorts. And it just, it was a very striking debut in a sense. The way that film was shot, the way it was acted, the way it was this thing. But there was also, like, a messiness about the writing that, I think the director found it a little difficult to get together, to sort of weave all those threads together by the end. And I felt like there's a more completeness in terms of screenplay, in terms of what the director wanted to say in Love Hostel. So I'd say Love Hostel is my more cherished film of Shankar Raman. And I feel like it helped that, you know, he didn't do the cinematography of Love Hostel. It was Vivek Shah, I think. And even though Shankar Raman is a very well-known cinematographer himself, I think he wrote this film and directed it, and I think that really helped him focus on how to get it together. And it was such a interesting film to make and produce and direct in times like these, you know, where anything can get banned from any streaming platform once a particular section of the people go up in arms with the right wingers, with the politicians, like just sort of almost seeping through the streaming space, looking through every show and film to see what offends them. It's a very subtle and difficult film to make at this point of time, and it's not coincidence that it was sort of all produced by Red Chillies also. So I felt like it was a fascinating film, and I think Vikrant Masar is terrific in it, and of course we've spoken about Bobby Deol earlier, and it's still my favorite Bobby Deol performance after his comeback. It's certainly not Animal. It was this. The way they used him in this, I think it was Shankar Raman can be proud of it.
Got it. And my last question, even though I haven't seen it, but tell the listeners your favorite scene from 12th Fail. It's okay, you can say spoilers, I don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, by now, I'm sorry if you haven't seen it, it's your problem, you need to have watched it. It's already on streaming platform. So, my favorite scene, there's so many favorite scenes. You know, it's funny because every time I talk to someone about 12th Fail, I recall at least four or five scenes. But, you know, like off the top of my head, it definitely be that the climactic moment when he actually crumples on his feet, when you realize that he stopped his class and finally become his past UPSC exams. His reaction, the way the scene is staged and his reaction, the way he falls to the ground, could have been so melodramatic. We've seen it happen in so many different films in so many different ways. But Vikrant Mase, what he brought to that particular gesture, that act, almost like he's been exorcised of spirits, of ghosts that he's been carrying around for so long. And you could also almost see his body become different after that. Like you could almost see one Manoj die and another being reborn. And I think it was a fantastic moment. It really gets me. I've watched that film three times now and it gets me so emotional. Even now, I just break down while watching that scene. And it's the same for when there's this small scene after that, like in almost the climax, after the climax, when he goes to meet Priyanshu's character after a long time and you see Priyanshu's reaction, the guy who actually inspired him to get on this path of truth and honesty and hard work and no cheating. You see this mentor who doesn't know he's a mentor and who realizes that this is what he's created, and that lovely embrace that he gives him. It's just so, like, I choke up even thinking about it and talking about it. Like, I have a lump in my throat right now. So, just that buildup of emotions, the way Vidhu Vinod Chopra has just built that up and gives us that release is really, those two moments really get me really emotional even now.
Got it. I'm going to watch it. I was busy on three of us. I've been watching Three of Us like in parts, which I will be hoping to finish some things about it as well. But that's on my list of things. So definitely I can't miss 12th Fail. So I'll be watching soon. But I know people who are listening will definitely relate to what you mentioned. Okay. All right. So thank you so much. I think we had some topics, but we have spoke for an hour. We'll cover next time, which would be something about Reema Kagti, and then we will have some other topics for discussion next time. So, okay. All right, Rahul, thank you so much for your insights. I think what really interested me today was what one line where you explained what exactly is the feature of black comedy. That was very insightful for me. So thank you for sharing your insights, and we will be back soon. So,
good to be back. Thank you.
Yeah.